welcome to the Hermit's Lamp podcast. I'm Andrew McGregor, and with each installation in this podcast, we're going to explore the world of spirituality, what it means to be alive, and how is it that we can bring our spiritual selves, tarot, meditation, religious or spiritual practices, into our daily lives. Please check out all of our episodes at thehermitslamp.com/podcasts, or you can search The Hermit's Lamp in podcasts on iTunes and download them all directly that way. So while I've got you here listening to this podcast, I want to mention a new project that I am rolling out. Can you imagine working with a tarot that reflected you in your life? Can you imagine working with a deck where all of the imagery was tied to your specific experiences, imagery, and history? Can you imagine going through a six-month journey of working with each of the cards and being guided through a process to help reveal both their nature and your relationship to them? Well, if that sounds like something you'd be interested in, then I invite you to check out my new project called A Tarot of Yourself, and it can be found at thehermitslamp.com/tarotofyou. The first round of this project is going to start in September. However, at any point, you can jump in and start your own journey with this process. So do go and check it out, thehermitslamp.com/tarotofyou, all one word. So welcome to the next installment of the Hermit's Lamp podcast. I am here with Bertrand Saint-Guillain, and we are going to be talking about art and tarot and, you know, all sorts of fun stuff. For some people who might not know who Bertrand is, why don't you introduce yourself and say something about who you are and what you've been up to?
Hello, I'm Bertrand Saint-Guillain. I live in Paris, where I read cards. And I create tarot decks, you know, I like engravings and doing stuff the old way. That's about it. And I do some other stuff not related to cards.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I really like your decks. You know, for me, one of the things that has always inspired me about metaphysical artwork are like the medieval alchemical engravings and, you know, all of those kinds of things, as well as like the block print stuff and those kinds of things. So, you know, that style has always kind of captivated me as something that is, I think, continuously contemporary, even though at the same time it feels very old.
Yeah, I totally agree about the fact that it is continuously contemporary, as you said. Well, and I think it's quite related to the techniques, you know, like engravings and simple drawings. That's something you can do at any time in history, any time, you know, in medieval ages, in the Renaissance, when the tarot was created, in fact. Well, supposedly, historically speaking. And, yeah, so it's not... these are not techniques which are related to a certain time frame. So you can do engravings in the Middle Age, in the Renaissance, and even contemporary artists used woodblock printings. German artists or Picasso did some lino prints, mm-hmm. lino blocks prints. Yeah. So yeah, indeed, it's not you're not stuck into something. How to say that? Sorry, my English shows its limitations. You're not stuck into a technical context. Mm. Yeah, and yeah. That's it. So you're dealing with the essential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something.
I hope that makes sense.
No, exactly. There's something very do it yourself. About some of these approaches, you know, when I was a teenager, I was all into the punk rock scene and that, and I used to produce my own zine, my own little magazine, as did a number of my friends, right? You know, and this was of course before, back in the 80s and early 90s, before digital print, digital processes were particularly accessible. And so we would take vinyl erasers and an X-Acto knife and carve, you know, slogans and, you know, the titles of our zines and make little stamps and put them on, you know, little address label stickers that we could, you know, buy or steal from our parents' collection and run around and slap stickers on things. So, you know, I have a real fondness for it as almost a revolutionary style in some way.
Yeah, it's also related to Luddism. Luddism,
mm-hmm.
You know,
being
like
a Luddite.
Yeah, Luddite. That's it. Like saying no to modern techniques and well, doing things without electricity mm-hmm. and all this stuff. And I find it funny that you speak about punk rock because, yeah, it's this notion of alternative.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you say it, and marginal creation, in fact. And Tarot used to be, I believe, quite something in the margins.
Yeah.
It's not mainstream creation. It's not mainstream art. It's more close to primitive art or what we call naive art, maybe. Mm-hmm. So something more... seminal, as they say, French intellectuals like this word, seminal, something, yeah, close to a teenage attitude or yeah, something wild, in fact. Mm-hmm. Tarot is wild.
Yeah. I think that is interesting, too, as, you know, as, because I run a store, I intersect with lots of people who are working with cards in many, many different levels, right? And, you know, I personally think that I'm out on the wild edge of it for the most time. You know, I'll read for anybody who walks in for the most part, who wants to hire me. You know, so people have access without vetting. I will go places with people, you know, if people want a predictive reading or if people want a magical and sort of more shamanic way of work, you know, like depending on the conversation that I have with the person, we'll go wherever, right? And at the same time, people come in who are working with like Doreen Virtue, you know, these kinds of things where it is very safe and very... that is one of its sort of main features, is that it is not wild and the wildness has been removed from it. And, you know, I mean, everybody has what they like and what works for them. But it's interesting to see this sort of juxtaposition of possibilities.
Yeah, I believe you can do something dangerous even with Doreen Virtues. You know, it depends on the reader in the end.
Uh-huh.
So you probably can do... the dark side of Doreen Virtues,
uh-huh.
and dark side of angels and all that stuff. And in fact, I believe some people do it even if they aren't aware they're doing it. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's like it can be quite powerful too, even if it looks safe.
Mm-hmm. Well, the shadow will speak if the shadow wants to speak, right?
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. So. I have one of your decks. I have your Triumph 2012.
Yeah.
which I am quite a fan of. And you know, I really enjoy the multiple layers of it where you've, you know, sort of popped luminaries of the tarot world into some of these cards and stuff like that. It really greatly amuses me, you know, and the idea that we could flip a card and be like, oh, you know, I don't care what card this is, but that's Enrique on there, Enrique, so maybe I should be poetic now, you know, and these wonderful sort of open-ended options that it allows for. It's really fascinating. How was creating that for you?
I'm glad that you talk about this deck because it's not really well-known, and it's... It was like a magical creation, this one. It started from quite a shamanic context, in fact. And it was inspired by a friend of mine who is quite involved in shamanic and African magic stuff. And he was really an incarnation of Le Mat, of the unnumbered card, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I had a vision of that friend as Le Mat from the cards, and I had to draw it, and it was the start for this deck. And starting from there, well, I felt obliged to put people that meant something about tarot, you know, in the card as the characters. And so, yes, it started from Le Mat, from a friend whose name is Bertrand Leroy, because it started in a vision, and there are a few people that were inspired by genuine visions, you know, like the devil, for instance, and Le Mat. And then there are those people like Enrique, who you talked about a bit earlier, who is such a great incarnation for Le Battler, mm-hmm. the magician. And so he came naturally into the deck. So, yeah, you can meet Enrique Enriquez and Mary Greer as the Popes, if I remember correctly. And a few existing people, also less known in the tarot world, but really inspired from visions, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a deck I like. I don't use it much, but I like it because it had some real effects on the reality, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't talk too much about it because, well, those magic stuff, you don't.
Sure.
You can't talk too much about them, but yeah, it really had quite an impact, and it reinforced the visions, and that's an aspect about making cards which is important. I believe when you draw a card, you don't simply change the tarot world; you change yourself. You change your vision, and you confirm them. Mm-hmm. That was an interesting point, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm doing this process where I'm taking people through a 6-month journey of creating their own majors. And, you know, where are we now? Four cards in. And it's one of the things that I really am hearing from the people who are doing the work is how much it is changing their sense of what the cards mean, for one, because the process is very much about helping reveal what it is in their life that relates to the card, as opposed to like, hey, you know, what hat would you prefer the fool wear, you know, or something, you know, more cosmetic. And it's also more magical, where people are looking to create synchronicities and looking to use chance as a way of determining what they need to think about and look at in their creation. And so people are coming back and talking about the ways in which their lives are shifting, the ways in which their sense of who they are in the world are shifting, you know. And we're only at 4. By the time we get to 22, well, goodness, we'll see what's happened, right?
Yeah, it can be quite powerful. Especially, I don't know, how many people are you bringing into that adventure?
There are 7 people going through it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that will probably be quite powerful. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's definitely not only changing how you see the card. That may be one of the first motivations from someone starting to create a tarot deck, like understanding it better. Mm-hmm. That was mine in the beginning. Well, in the beginning, I mean, when I was 16 years old, the first thing I wanted to do when I met the tarot was to create one, to understand how it worked, how it was made, you know. But back in the days, there were not so many informations about card makers, and there wasn't internet, so information wasn't as available as it is right now. But yes, this is the most obvious motivation, but it's not the most important result, mm-hmm. As you point out. Yeah. And well, in fact, you don't understand much of the existing cards when you make a tarot, but you understand a lot about the one you're making.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly. That's the point. And through that, you get information about the original cards, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But through the most important filter, which is yes, how you are transformed and how you can see the small part of creation that can be put in the card. Because following the tarot frame, the tarot pattern, you know, the numbers of cards, everything, 22 cards, le battleur, le mat, the popes, etc. It doesn't give you a lot of expressive space. You know, you don't have plenty of room to express yourself because you have to follow that pattern, which is quite rigid in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's through the small room where you can, I don't know, work on the faces, the expressions, positions, what you don't follow, what you follow, that you can see just how much you understand about the cards, in fact. And probably that's where the subtle transformation occurs.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, it's really interesting that when you start looking at, especially because, you know, your decks are Marseille style, right? So, you know, where we're looking at this sort of simpler, or as we said earlier, kind of more naive thing, you know, it's interesting how much is there. You know, I sort of have, over the past number of years, made the transition to just reading with this style of deck, right? And, you know, the level of detail in the swoop of the hair and the angle of the eye and the, you know, like, it becomes a sort of thing where all of the micro elements become so significant in a way that when we're looking at, you know, I grew up on the Toth deck, right? Which is so much more complex in terms of its levels and numbers of symbols, but at the same time it becomes obtuse, right? It becomes hard to access, you know. And I think that this is one of the things that people, I'm hoping, will find in the class that I'm running starting next week, and you know, as the Marseille seems to be gaining more popularity over here in North America, that these cards are immediately accessible, and yet they carry all of that other depth as you dig into them.
Mm-mm. Yeah, and it's a bit amusing because, in fact, more modern decks, such as the Rider-Waite-Smith or the third deck, they are quite dense, you know. Everything is intellectually conceived, like positions, like numbers, everything is taken into account. While in the older decks, like the Marseille, the global pattern is always the same, position looks the same, but in fact, artists used to put their, how do you say that, leur patte, their style, their ideas, in the the things that are not rigidly codified.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that makes sense.
Yeah. There's a certain structure, right? There is a fool. The fool is being clawed by an animal of some sort. He's got a bag, probably. Beyond that, what else is there that's really set in stone, right? It's up to you. What kind of tree? What kind of grass? What, you know? Where is he looking? Does he have a beard or not? And if so, you know, is it a hipster beard or is it something else? Right?
Is it an old man beard? Is it,
yeah.
You have plenty of choices to make. In fact, and every choice is a good one. You know, mm-hmm. you can go wrong. In fact, because you can't copy exactly an older deck. You can, but it won't change you at all.
Mm.
You are not creating. But yeah, you in the mistake you make, in the in the differences you make from the original pattern, you can't go wrong. In you only do the right shows, which are the same thing that ancient card makers did. They also created that to fill in the gaps, the blanks. You know, if you take the style one pattern from the Tarot de Marseille, which is a bit simpler, you can see there are several different things between the Dodal deck and the Jean Payen deck. Mm-hmm. Some details about not only the expressiveness of the characters, but also the ornaments. Like on the Pope card, you can see on certain of this deck the alchemical symbol from the salt, which disappear in some other deck. In the style 2 pattern from the Tarot de Marseille, you also can find spot little differences, like on the Fool card again. There's this little bell which has fallen from the Fool costume, which disappeared in certain decks. And it was not, I don't think these are mistakes from the engravers, but they simply choose. It was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I love how with these decks there are so many varieties available too. You know, I read with the Noble. That's the one that I work with. You know, but I also have, I don't know, a handful of other ones. You know, as as one does, right? And like I love how it's the Villevieuve where the star card is the astronomer, you know?
Yeah.
And so there are these sort of, you go along and then all of a sudden there are these radical departures too, right? Which are not incongruous with the interpretations, but are, you know, kind of shocking. You know, I remember the first time I was flipping through it, I'm like, who's this guy? Where's the woman? Where's the water? Where's the cups, right? You know? And yet, in readings, I'm often talking about the star card as astrology or astronomy and notions of destiny and fate and all of those things, right? So I love that kind of making more present what is maybe a subtext in other depictions.
Yeah, and this one is quite literally about astronomy, but I really love the Vieville deck. And his astronomer is his star card. I mean, mm-hmm. He's very precious because he opens with this card. He opens so many meanings, so many possible meanings. Like the tower at the right of the card, it can be seen as I don't know, a spaceship about to start. You know, it's uh-huh. It's really so much. There is so much more in this deck than in the regular Marseille deck. Which I used to, but the Vieville gives really plenty of possibility of interpretations, and on the same on the other hand, it's quite literal because the star is about the star, someone watching the star, someone taking using a compass. Mm-hmm. That's it. So it's basically an astrologer or an astronomer. And on the other hand, the card opens a lot of ideas, a lot of possibilities, because maybe the representation is more complex and totally not codified compared to the Marseille pattern. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the Vieville is the best example of a creation around the Marseille pattern, yeah, probably. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and too, I love the idea of the spaceship or, you know, all these sort of, you know, when I used to think, you know, because I used to be, you know, as I said, a Toth person, and really what I used to be at one point was a Toth snob, right? I was like, if it's not the Toth, it's not a good tarot deck. And, you know, I'm a little embarrassed to admit it now, but well, you know, I was young. We were all young once. And I used to think of these things as old-fashioned, you know, as outdated and outmoded. But when we look at them and we look at the shape and the form and we think about the shape and the form that we see in our kind of contemporary life, we can interpret those as anything, right? You know, I remember I was reading for somebody and I flipped over the Ace of Swords, right? And I looked at it and, you know, instead of seeing the crown at the top there, I saw somebody's stomach, you know, because the oval shape is reminiscent of that, right? And mm-hmm. and the sword is penetrating it. And I looked at this card and I looked at the person and I said, you're thinking about having surgery on your stomach, or you got something coming up like that, right? And if, you know, they're like, yeah, I'm thinking about getting one of those, you know, laparoscopic weight loss things, you know? And I was like, fair enough, you know? And then we went from there and the card said, go for it, you know? But it's amazing how our modern eyes can see modern things in these older imageries.
Yeah, I think this is, well, it works well with these old images, but it's the basis for the real cartomancy. The example you just gave is, well, perfect one, because that's how things happen after, you know, what's written in the books, like this card means whatever, this thing, fate, I don't know, disease, something. But when you really do a reading, some information, they just occur. They happen, you receive them, mm-hmm. and they take shape within the card. So I suppose it works just as well with the Todd deck, but yeah, with the Marseille, definitely. It's like when you reach the real thing. I don't know how to call it, but the magical process, and anything can mean many things, not everything, but many things. Mm-hmm. That's why you can see a stomach within the Ace of Swords, or you can see. A surgery table in the Battleur, which is mm-hmm. which is not something you'll find in a book, but it isn't something you can really explain before you experiment it. Mm-hmm. And probably, yeah, the simplicity of the old design work like some kind of receptor, you know, something which isn't stuck in a very precise representation. So it's, I believe it's a better way to start doing a proper card reading. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. I like what you said. The, you know, you can, it can mean many things, but not everything, you know? In talking with Camille Elias, you know, she talked about the deck that I made as it fits within the elastic band test of tarot. You can stretch it so far, but it doesn't break, right? But, you know, but it can break. And you know, this where, you know, certain things can't mean everything. And, you know, if you sort of like have the zero relationship to the imagery or, you know, history or context or something, you know, there needs to be at least one or two kind of anchor points, I think, for the magic to really flow, you know. Not everyone doesn't need to be historically accurate or necessarily maybe, you know, because, you know, knowing many decks, sometimes I'm like, oh, if we were looking at this deck, I would be telling this story right now. And so I'll tell this story, right? Mm-hmm. You know, but that flexibility about it is quite wonderful.
Yeah, it's a nice spot where we stand at when we're reading cards, because we have the concrete explanations about history, about dates and everything, but we definitely know that cards weren't made for card readings, and so we can pretend to be serious people and nerdy scholars about cards. Mm-hmm. And we can, on the other hand, do our stuff and in a like hidden way, in fact, doing a magical act, mm-hmm. or shamanic or whatever you choose mm-hmm. to call it. But yeah, and that's why, in fact, the Marseille decks in general are really useful, because we're not stuck at all in the esoteric tradition. You know, well, mm-hmm. there is one which we know it now. It dates from the late 18th century. But we are not obliged to take it into account, and we can even pretend to be more serious if we say, well, this was all some kind of bullshit occultist invented. But I do something else. Exactly. And I don't mind, because there is a tradition that nobody really knows, because people who started it are long dead. Mm-hmm. So we can enter the magical and important things with a serious context. Mm. And it can be reassuring, I don't know, but it works most of the time.
Exactly. I love the notion of, you know, we've been talking about wildness and magic and being unserious, you know? What would you suggest? If somebody has been going along being serious, you know, what would you suggest a step towards being wilder or unserious or more magical might be for someone who's kind of interested in exploring that direction?
It would be difficult to suggest things that would stay in a legal context. So, well, from my point of view, someone may start by still being serious and waiting for something wild to happen, you know, not choosing to be wild, not choosing to lose seriousness, but maybe overdo it to the point where it breaks, and where you know, the weird stuff simply happen, and you see them happening. So there is something I used to show to people who want to understand how the Marseille deck can work, which consists in simply spreading in a very methodical way the numeral cards, you know, simply from the 2 to the 10, the sword, and then the batons, the staves, the cups, and the coins, the deniers, in the end. And doing it very seriously, very well-ordered, and simply starting to watch them. And by watching them, you can start to see the movements, and you enter quite a soft psychedelic experience, in fact. Mm. You know, when you see there are things moving when nothing is moving, but you can feel, you know, how the visual dimension can express itself, maybe through your brain, maybe through some magical influence. You don't have to choose an explanation, but something is happening by doing something quite simple, serious, well-organized, almost mathematical. And you just have to watch and experiment this. So, by being quite serious, well-organized, you can enter another dimension, which is much more crazy in itself. Because you just experiment something which is close to an hallucination or a vision, simply by being methodical.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that the idea too of really not deciding what it's going to mean, not deciding what it's going to be, right? Is it magical? Is it psychological? Is it, you know, all of these kinds of things? Well, time will tell, right? You know, and this is kind of one of the things that I really have focused on a lot myself, and sometimes with other people, but this notion that if it means something, I will know at some point, right? And if it is, you know, that at some point some understanding will emerge from the mystery that will allow me to interpret it, and what's more, will kind of be one of these sort of you know, postmodernist sort of always already reinterpretation of my life. You know, as I moved from ceremonial to Afro-Cuban practices, I could see the fingers of those traditions long back in my history. Is that literally true? Is it metaphorically true? Is it, you know, is it just symbolically helpful? Is it, you know, if I had gone in a different direction, would I have interpreted the symbol in a different construct? Who cares? It doesn't really matter, right? These kinds of knowing, we're moving beyond the rational. So why hold it to that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're moving far beyond the rational, but yeah, we have beliefs, and we can't avoid them, but we have to embrace our beliefs. So yeah, you don't have to say it's magic. You just show it, and people will experiment and try to integrate it in their own structures. So for some of them who want to keep rational, they will find complex explanations. And some other people will have a more flexible grid of interpretation, which will allow them to, I don't know, call it magical, call it entities, or whatever. But yeah, the main point is that everything is working. Now, if you ask me about beliefs, I would say you were speaking about the fingers of the tradition touching something in your past. Mm. I would say, personally, that this is totally true. That's how things work. But, well, this is really a question of beliefs.
Yeah.
So I can justify why I would say that. But I totally agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think so. I think that I take it as literally true as well. You know, but when I'm working with other people, I'm more flexible, you know?
Yeah.
Because for me, the literal trueness of what I'm doing for myself at this point is very effective and it's bringing me lots of personal growth and lots, you know, many, many levels. It works very, very well for me. So, you know, there's no need to evaluate that, you know, but I'm always interested when people come in and, you know, often my style is very conversational, right? So like, I don't really like it when people come in and sit down and look like a brick for 30 minutes while I talk to them. You know, it's not that it's not possible, but it's just not particularly enjoyable. And, but at the same time, so then I'm having conversations with people and people are always telling me many, many things, you know, and then when I recite them back to them, then often they're taking them as magical and mystical knowledge, which they are unaware that they have handed over, you know? And, mm-hmm. you know, at that point, it becomes a matter of being the magician and deciding what illusions are fruitful to keep and what illusions might be more fruitful to break, right, in order to produce the show.
Yeah, there is this trickery dimension, yeah, which is close to shamanism, too. Because we need some to instill the magic ambiance.
Mm-hmm, how you say that?
The magic context.
We say so, ambiance. So, yeah.
Yeah. The some maybe for ourselves when we're reading, we have to put ourselves in a state of consciousness, I would say, where we believe in magic, where we believe that. Shuffling the cards and spreading them will give messages,
mm-hmm.
and it has some effect also on the person you're reading for. But one of the difficult things is to not be fooled ourselves, you know. and it's true that when we're reading, we can fool ourselves and we can believe that we. I don't know, guessed things that people just told us a bit earlier. So it's important to stay aware of all the information we receive. I personally ask people not to talk too much when I don't know them and have to do a reading for them. I sometimes have to say, please stop speaking, mm-hmm. because I will have a hard time filtering what's coming from the cards. And what are the information you gave me? So, yeah, I too don't like when people just don't talk because it's quite exhausting. And you are all the time wondering, am I saying something wrong? Or mm-hmm. am I touching a point I shouldn't speak about?
Yeah.
But before the reading, I try not to discuss too much, to stay aware of what information come from maybe the relation we're having or the cards themselves or whatever, and what information come from directly from the person. And I tend to say this thing you told me earlier, and from that I can say, you know, well, staying well aware of that point. Yeah, it can be difficult at times because we want to believe a lot too.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's, you know, for me, I have no interest in putting on a show, you know? And so in the same way that you say, you know, the idea of just saying, look, you told me this, blah, 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 you know? Or, you know, like, look, you know, you walked in and you look this way, like you're all confident and now you're in the reading room and now you're all nervous and uncomfortable, you know, it tells me that you're being, maybe not being authentic in your life. You know, I mean, we can interpret many things, and certainly letting people know that we are functioning on all those levels is I think is very true, and especially to not fool ourselves, right? Because I know so many people, you know, I've known many readers who like sit down and they put out some cards and then they say some stuff. And then they're like, all right, see you later. And then they're like, I'm the best reader ever. And then I talk to the person they read for, and they're like, it didn't make any sense at all. Like, I don't even, never mind in terms of my life, but it just doesn't even make any sense, you know? And I'm like, yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think that at the end of the day, it's so important to be strict with ourselves, right? Where, you know, just like the structure of the Marseille, right? We can do many things within a given context, but if we are not strict with ourselves about those limits, then we'll get into trouble, you know, spiritually, ethically, or otherwise, I guess.
Yeah. Ethically is the most rational part, yeah, but also spiritually, that's right. About that, well, nothing about that. You say it's quite well. You can edit that one.
Excellent. So, you know, we're running out of time here today, but if people want to come and find you, one, where can they find your beautiful tarot decks? And two, if they wanted to, you know, follow up on this conversation or sort of be online somewhere where you're hanging out, where might they look for you?
Okay, they might look on the web, uh-huh. Obviously. For the cards, I can find it on my website, which is called tarotparis.com, which I will spell tarotparis.com. And regarding card readings, they can find me at bertrandtarot.com. Which is my name, bertrandtarot.com. I think
perfect.
Maybe that's understandable.
Yeah. Absolutely, and there'll be a link in the post as well.
Yeah, it will be better.
Probably. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for making time to chat with me today. It has been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure too. I hope everything I said made some sense, because when I'm speaking, my English can be a bit weird.
Your well, English is magnifique. All right.
But yeah, probably it worked like the Marseille pattern, you know, something that doesn't make really sense in general, but people will hear things I didn't say, and mm-hmm. that will be really fine. I hope it will be that way.
There's magic in the conversation, and however it needs
exactly.
to be received, yeah. It will be received. Beautiful. So thank you for listening. And if you are getting the bug to start exploring these Tarot de Marseille, please consider checking out the Marseille for Modern Times, where a bunch of wonderful contemporary Marseille users share their excitement and passion for this deck. Camille Elias, Enrique Enriquez, Christopher Carroza, Yov Bendov,
and myself all dig into different approaches to working with this deck. You will find that it is both more profound than it looks at first glance and easier to learn than most people would have you believe. You can find it all about that at thehermitslamp.com right off of the homepage.